Present for, are we going? Present for the purposes of quorum are Senators Ziegler, Coletta, Tillian, and Holman. Proceed.
Thank you. My name is Barry Stern. The first section is bribery, and that begins.
I
says makes repeated anonymous telephone calls, and makes repeated telephone calls extremely convenient hours. Now, we both agree that it should say...
I get all my constituents.
It should say repeated, we both agree that it should require that the extremely convenient hours be made repeated. But the anonymous telephone calls, I'm somewhat uneasy about prohibiting just a single anonymous phone call in the statute. But Dan has a reason to agree with
the situation that the police raises, and I have to agree with this, that where someone has received a number of anonymous phone calls, they work out an arrangement with the phone company to, when he or she gets warned, then they leave the line open and trace it back, and they can find out who it is, and hopefully make an arrest. And there's no way you're going to be able to prove that the calls that were made anonymously prior to that were made by the same person.
I think I've thought about this. Does require that you act with intent to arrest or annoy. So, in order to get a prosecution, you have to prove that the person acted with that intent. I was concerned about the situation. You might call off a friend and you might just get through the business and hang up and cover it, but you wouldn't be arguing with intent to arrest.
Okay, do you two come to an agreement then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't know.
Which is what?
Well, describe the first repeated on line 2 on page 64. It really should say makes an anonymous telephone call.
Okay. But you have this other safeguard.
We'll bring these back to the defendant.
Well, yeah, except that when we're all done, it'll be a community substitute.
Subsection 4 does cover the single obscene telephone call and a telephone call that threatens physical injury. Subsection 5 covers subjecting another person to offensive physical contact. This originally fairly...
How did I get in there?
Well, I'll tell you. It used to be covered as simple assault. In most codes, it's covered as harassment. And let me stress that it requires that you act with intent to arrest or annoy, and that's the introductory clause on line 25 on the previous page. Yeah. And acting with that intent, you subject another person to offensive physical contact. What it's trying to get at is a situation that you might just slap someone or give them a shove or
grab him in the chest with the finger to make a point when the guy says knock it off.
Yes, if you could prove, I think you would have to really show that you continued that after you said knock it off.
Grabbing the scuff of the neck and holding.
Yeah. So we didn't want to classify that conduct as an assault because we thought it was something, there was no physical pain.
The other kind of assault doesn't require any intent, of course, which this crime would.
Well, the other type of assault just requires an intent to cause the injury. With intent to cause physical injury, you cause physical injury.
Okay, then this is an intent to drive somebody up a tree.
Exactly.
All right.
Abuse of a corpse is next, and we both think that it's mislabeled, and I think it should be called this conduct involving corpses, or something to that effect. The reason being is that it covers in subsection 1, intentionally disinterring, removing, concealing, or mutilating a corpse, and that would cover such acts as, under existing law, we have a statute covering concealment of birth by mothers. So that no one can determine whether it was born or alive or not. And this would cover that, since you can feel the corpse, conceal the newborn baby. And since it's called, well, I would think it was. I mean, you bury the corpse, you know someone was born, and the mother's hiding the corpse, I would think she's concealing the corpse. Well, I do.
Stillborn is not a corpse, it's just a leper.
Subsection 2 under 130 reminds me of the story about the guy who had been divorced for a couple of years and he got all fired up on martini on a sunny afternoon and he met his ex-wife at the street corner when he left the bar. And a little bit of nostalgia overtook him and he said, honey, why don't we go up to the apartment and have out of just one time for old time's sake? She said, over my dead body. He said, you haven't changed a bit.
I was thinking that, maybe you and the prosecutor relationships with bridges people, and maybe we should require that the corpse have a certain body.
Well, anyway, the thing is that this seems to me a Do you fellows have any objections in this thing?
Well, I think that's, I'd like to change the title, frankly. I think that misconduct may be the better one.
Misconduct with a corpse or on a corpse or to a corpse or what?
Misconduct involving a corpse.
All right.
So it might be.
I have no objection to the title change.
It does take, eliminate the presence of holding a dead body to death.
Right.
It has to be.
Right, and the committee.
Oh, why did you, isn't that covered somewhere else?
The subcommittee felt that should be death, felt was civilly.
Oh, that's one that I've used a number of times, letting me get these morticians to let loose. And they will not let loose, and the thing that I've done, and this has happened about four times, is I have called the local judge in Anchorage and said, would you mind phoning him and telling him that either he sends the body down or you send a state trooper over? You know, and every time, why, the body is held down.
Let me just check my job.
Because they will, if it's just a civil thing, they'll risk the fact they can't be touched, and they will force. You know, what happens is a trooper orders the body brought in for autopsy. The mortician grabs a hold of the body, and he won't turn it loose without payment. And we don't feel that it's up to the widow to pay it. The trooper ordered it in there. It's not her debt.
Well, did they testify as much in front of House Judiciary and the medical examiner bill? That the whole, one of the big concerns of the bill, the medical examiner bill, was that it would no longer be the case that they would get their hands on the body first. And that possession of the body is 9/10 of the law. Once you have possession of the body, it's more likely than not that the family will simply say, well,
it's kind of macabre.
This is right, but the thing is that I do want that section in there where it is a crime to hold a body for payment. I'm glad you brought it up.
Well, let me just read you from the commentary on this. That we don't retain that offense in the code. While such conduct may be offensive, the subcommittee felt that existing civil remedies were adequate. The Edwards and Frankie mortician's license may result in failure to properly direct the custody of the corpse on order first lawfully entitled to custody. Obviously, we can add it.
Well, if you don't mind adding it, the thing is, I've only had these four cases, you know, where people have called and what'll I do? You know, they came and took Charlie and sent him into Anchorage. And I don't have the money, you know, and the neighbors will just bury him. You know, it's no charge. And the mortician is holding it. One of them, he says, well, remember, it's my box. And I said, yep. You sent it down. We had a plywood box. We just rolled him out of one into the other, and I sent it back to collect. You know, hey. Well, hey, you know, we saved the widow $250. And it was just a bunch of us that weren't coming to see her taken to the cleaner.
Right, she doesn't penetrate the corpse.
You know, right. If you don't have a spike or something sticking up. But just,
we'll take a look at that.
I'd like it to where it was still an actual crime to demand payment before the release of a body.
I have a special thing. I need to go off.
Mortician's waiting.
Mortician's leave. You can have it.
There you
6 months you can be. Well,
back to your question. Okay. All right. Cruelty to animals.
Okay.
Query. Query. Why prolong physical pain?
Dan is the expert on this.
Well, why prolong?
Because you're going to whip them once in a while.
We wanted that torturing. We did not want it. The subcommittee felt that unless it was actual torturing the animal, it should not be covered in the statute.
In other words, a deliberate pattern of injury being inflicted.
That was my idea. Subcommission basically requesting a felony provision, and I basically got laughed out of the room. But I actually was quite serious about it. I've seen two or three cases that are just extraordinarily awful.
Yeah.
Where
I've seen a beat with a 2x4.
Where people
like
have
that.
Kept a dog, or and usually a dog, alive, you know, for a long period of time, and repeatedly stabbed them or beat him, starved
him.
Tortured him. I mean, just for pleasure. And I personally, and you have to understand, I own a 200-pound St. Bernard, ruled my life, but and that
one of the reasons why most of the people in the country who knew me well laughed at me. But, and I was even going to bring it into the business.
I've done that too.
But,
big dog.
But I do think, you know, that the cases that I've seen are extreme. And they involve a level of conduct on the part of the individual who's engaged in it. It's not necessarily the case that people do it or think either.
No.
They're just mean, nasty.
Let me ask you a question along this. Since pain, severe or otherwise, is an objective proposition, don't you want to make the conduct which is likely to cause severe physical pain the criterion rather than if you and I may have different views about whether an animal is in severe physical pain, but if we punish the conduct which makes it likely that somebody has inflicted pain, injuries, which can.
Agree, you mean it is to really objective manifestations of pain?
Yeah. Can you rework on that a little bit?
I think so.
I have a real problem with it. You know, like I'm training my Labradors when I had a knotted rope, you know. They wander out of that line, she came down and hard. One. You know, it didn't last long before they weren't doing it. But you do, you know, you're trying to saddle a horse that's giving you trouble, you put a twitch on it, you know, on the nose.
Well, I think on
the B... Is this a legal way of handling a horse?
I think it's on B3, line 27, you could probably find an escape hatch.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we could work on it sometime. But on the basic question of how does the community feel about attempting to separate out really aggravated forms of conduct without any lawful excuse.
That's what cruelty I'm willing to really come down to.
Well, how about resulting in the death of the animal?
Well, lots of times it doesn't.
Well, I think that, I guess in my mind, if someone wanted to go out and kill their dog quickly, that doesn't rise to the same level of conduct in my judgment as for someone, you know, over a period, long period of time, repeatedly tortured.
You know, the way the Navy do it, FBI, when they don't want a dog team anymore, they just stop bringing water to it. They never do anything about killing them. He just lays there and slowly fades away.
Well, they do that with people, don't they? Well, they used to. Not on their dogs, but anything.
I've seen a whole dog team at Barrow just chain to a post and left there. You know, there they are, laying there, soft the fur the next.
Very analytical.
But, you know, and that's the traditional method of disposing of them. Man can't kill his own dog.
I agree with that. The idea of treating any type of cruelty animal, just in the sense that I think the conduct that Dan is discussing, I think that probably the person doing it is probably fairly insane. I think that the way to deal with it, perhaps not by putting the person in jail for 3 years. Now, I might just be over.
Senselessly cruel, you bet there has to be some way to.
You think a year is not sufficient in that type of conduct?
Just some of the real flagrant abuses I've seen, I don't want to, give the judge plenty of leeway. Some of them deserve it.
Well, yeah, but you can't, I don't think that it's cruel or senselessly kill a dog, for example. I kind of agree with what Barry said. I don't think the judge has the power to give him 365 days. I think the average Joe citizen is reprehensible as the crime was, figure what the hell a year topside is enough. And so I don't think there ought to be made a felony, but.
Well, the big trouble of leaving it as a misdemeanor is the difficulty of it.
Well, if you make it a felony, I don't think people are going to think.
Well, I think if we wanted to make a felony signal out the type of conduct we're discussing, I think it'd probably be so vague and.
Well, you prefer an A misdemeanor?
I think the idea of having it, treating killing an animal more seriously than beating up a human being is somewhat.
I have a great deal more sympathy for animals than I do.
Yeah, I think it should, no matter what we define that, it should be an A misdemeanor.
But I don't think a person has to be insane.
Oh,
I should note that my comments in this respect are personal.
You can live with an A misdemeanor?
Yeah, I have so far, and I didn't raise it.
Okay.
No, I think I have raised it.
Okay.
Construction of highways covers two types of conduct. First is permitting any substance to drop on a highway that creates substantial risk of physical injury to other persons using the highway. For example, glass, you're carrying glass to the dump, and it drops out of the truck, you're carrying it. Or recklessly rendering a highway impassable or passable with unreasonable inconvenience or hazard. The kind of conduct that the commentary discusses, which we covered in two, the situation where a person parks his car halfway onto the road to look at a booth, and as a result of that, people have to go into the other lane. Which felt that is a fairly dangerous type of activity.
Well, wouldn't it be a defense? Let me ask you. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to go through your retirement. That's just
go ahead. Yeah.
Time.
Everything's going fine, I think.
All right. Well, wouldn't it be a defense that the defendant was unaware of the fact that he had rendered a highway impassable? I'm thinking of the dump truck.
The dump truck that dropped a few rocks out that caused problems.
Okay. Under subsection 1, the few rock example, it's strict liability. We're saying that if it's a substance that creates substantial risk, you should take, you're liable no matter what happens on it.
Shouldn't the element of knowingly be involved? Because
well, I see the one thing about, say I've loaded up a load of boulders so the base fell on my new road.
For your rock garden.
And I come up with those, and I've dumped a whole bunch down there on the road, and I wiped the underside of the guy's car off that's coming behind me because it's too high to clear his, and I've really messed it and smashed his oil pan and stuff. I should be strictly liable. I should have no defense of the fact that
you would be liable civilly, but should you be liable criminally? That's all I'm asking.
No, criminally, I agree with you. There should be knowingly, like where you take a few logs out on the road to slow the traffic down.
Yeah.
What about this? What about not making it a misdemeanor, just treating it as a violation? In other words, a violation is a non-criminal offense punishable only by fine.
And then the mitigating circumstances could be taken into consideration. Like, oh, Your Honor, I didn't know that I dropped the lumber out of the back of my pickup truck.
Yeah. But the thing is that the idea of proving knowledge is similar, like when we discussed littering. You know, we had recklessly in there, and you said, well, it's just cover placement, throwing the litter. And we wanted the guy to be.
Yeah, I think there should be something. If you didn't have your lumber latched down or you didn't have the tailgate latched and you dropped it to where somebody else had to stop, thereby risking a collision to get rid of it.
There would be civil liability if you.
Yeah, but it should be an offense like running a stop sign anyway. Would you be willing to go around?
I don't know.
We're going to have to think about how to work through littering. Maybe it's covered. If we're going to make it a violation, it might already be covered under the littering statute.
Yeah, but it's not littering if you drop boulders or lumber or something like that. Or littering is something that you do not want.
Yeah.
This might be something that you very much want.
Yeah.
But it's just, you didn't take the proper precautions of tying, lashing,
maybe
and
something.
Okay.
Now I'm looking for closures. That begins on page 72 of the bill.
No, that's my area.
There is one, just from a technical standpoint, we have this now as a separate chapter. We have it as chapter 71.
Take a break here before we get into it. Mr. Lysak?
Yes.
Boy, we're going right.
There you go. Richard, you want to look? Here's a roadie folder if you want to.
Oh, okay.
We're on page 72.
I want to apologize for my penmanship. It's got late in the
day.
It's pretty floppy, all right.
You go up, that's a sign of an optimist, right?
Yeah.
Depress. Some kind of depressor. I don't know what the misspelling is.
Okay, I think that just from a technical standpoint, this thing, this article, this chapter should be treated as an offense against public order. That should be chapter 51. Misconduct involving weapons in the first degree covers three types of conduct. The first is possessing a firearm capable of being concealed on the person after having been convicted of crime involving violence. On page 76, we define crime involving violence. subsection 2 is knowingly transferring one of those firearm capable of being concealed on a person to a person we know has been convicted of a crime involving violence. Subsection 3 is possessing or manufacturing a prohibited weapon. And prohibited weapon is defined in the bill on page 78 as including grenades, metal knuckles, firearm silencers, switchblade or grabbing knife, sort of shotgun, sort of rifle. We have two defenses. The first is to the felon in possession, or it's actually broader than that. It's subsection 1 and 2, which is crimes involving violence. And it's a defense that you had received a pardon or a period of 5 years to last since you were incarcerated on a prior offense. Subsection C provides a defense to the prohibited weapons section, which says if you registered the prohibited weapon pursuant to the National Firearms Act, it is not a crime. Now, I know Dan
has... That's my machine gun. That's my machine gun. I have a brand at home.
Well, that was, you know, that's...
Legally registered.
Yeah. So it would be included. Now, Dan has two or three suggestions on this. It's probably best for him to go through it.
On subsection A3, manufactured possession, transfer, self-transfer, the police would like to add the word unlawfully at the beginning of the line. So it's unlawfully manufactured possession, transfer, self.
So the rest of the guy gun dealer's license.
No problem.
Well, they're concerned about the weapons they have that they are not required to register under the federal law, which would include tear gas grenades.
Okay, unlawfully is fine.
The Second Amendment in the defense, subsection D, I think it's a technical matter. A new subsection 2 should be added that makes it clear that if the underlying conviction on which the action is based is set aside under as an SIS under AS 12585 or as a result of post-conviction proceedings, then it also doesn't qualify for giving rise to liability based on possession by conduct.
No problem there.
Okay.
I think it's easier if you refer to lines and pages.
All right, that would be page 73 between lines 1 and 2. And I search the following renumber accordingly to the underlying conviction upon which the action is based. That is set aside under AS 12585 or as a result of post-conviction procedures. Then existing subsection 2 there, which would be lines 14 through 17 on page 73. The existing statute provides that the exclusion is 10 years or more. And that was only recently adopted in 1976. And it was a governor's bill drafted by my office at that time. And prior to that, there was no year restriction. In other words, someone
was forever.
It was at one time forever. Now it's been cut down to 5 years. But not only that, it only excludes periods of incarceration, means that if a person was convicted
on parole for the next 10 years or 5 years.
That's right. He could still be on parole and unless the condition of his parole said he couldn't keep the weapon.
What's the amendment?
The amendment is change that number 2 to read a new 3. A period of 10 years or more has elapsed between the date when any disability has ceased to attach to the conviction of the prior offense and the date of the possession sale at the or transfer of the firearm. So it would be conviction plus disability, which would include probation or parole, plus 10 years.
Just let me point out, the subcommittee felt that, in fact, this may be too harsh considering the requirement of people engaged in businesses who need a firearm, and specifically Bush, Alaska. And they felt that a 5-year period should be sufficient. I think the reason it was a 7, it was not down to a 5.
I think originally it was lifetime. We knocked it down to 10 not
that
long ago.
Gabe?
Well, I think a felon actually, when you've committed one, it should stick with you for a long time. You know,
the other point is the definition of crime involving violence is fairly narrow.
Yeah, it has to be, you have to have misused.
Well, why don't we take the amendment and keep your 5-year period?
Yeah, that's what I would suggest then, actually. a 5-year period plus all this, because I actually, Dan, I think you go broader, because the existing statute just refers to the final termination of the sentence, including any probationary period.
All right. That's the same as what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, if the guy's on probation for 10 years, and then 5 years after that, we're talking about a potential 15-year period?
No, that's whatever the judge puts.
Yeah.
But this gives the judge the...
Well, he's got to be out of the woods for at least 5 years.
After his termination.
After, you know, and I think in Alaska, that's plenty.
I happen to be on your side on this, but I...
You say for a 5-year period.
All right. Take the hickey language.
Take the hickey
amendment. Take the hickey amendment. 10 to 5.
All right.
On second degree, there are 6 types of conduct prohibited. The first is possession of a deadly weapon when physical or mental condition is substantially impaired from drug or alcohol. Going over this for the first time, I think that may be too broad. Deadly weapons include knives.
Firearms only, it should be.
Yeah, and I know, Dan, you feel it should be a felony, don't you?
No, okay.
I think that probably should be more of a firearm. And similarly, subsection 2, which covers selling it to a person, knowing that the condition is impure, should also be a firearm. Subsection 3 covers removing the manufacturer's serial number on a firearm with intent to render the firearm untraceable. And you must approve that specific intent. Subsection 4 covers possessing a firearm, knowing that the manufacturer's serial number has been removed with that intent. Subsection 5 covers discharging a firearm from, on, or across the highway. And subsection 6 covers discharging a firearm with reckless disregard of the risk of damage to property or the risk of physical injury to a person.
Let's not go so fast.
On
4, I say that's okay. On page 73, let's assume that you're nutty enough to buy a weapon with a non-existent serial number or an obliterated serial number. Well, how do you know that that was done with the intent of running the firearm untraceable? That's the condition that you're buying it in. What do you know about the intent of the person who did this?
You don't, that you would not be covered. You'd have to prove, I think it'd be very difficult to get a conviction under.
In other words, I'm going to say to you, I'll buy your .38 pistol provided that you destroy the serial number.
Yes, you grind her off.
Or you know, it was you were in league with the person. You knew a friend of yours was dealing with stolen firearms. And the reason why it's so strict is because we were concerned about a person being allowed to do what they want with their firearms, you know, so long as they didn't have a criminal intent.
Yeah, that's for
Mr. Higgins. Okay, I'm okay.
All right, now we've made that one change, though.
On those subsections.
For the drunk, it's only a firearm.
Line what? What are we doing now? Line 15, firearm, right?
And also line 19,
firearm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Given the fact that change has been made, I think that reinforces the point I'd like to make, and that is that I think that subsections 2, 3, and 4 are inappropriately grouped with 1, 5, and 6. I think that 1, 5, and 6 are legitimately misdemeanor offenses, but I think that 2, 3, and 4 represent more serious conduct. 3 and 4 in particular, you're talking about professional criminals, and I think they ought to be raised in terms of the offense that is themselves. You're basically talking about people, you know, removing serial numbers.
That's the serial number thing, yeah.
So that they're not going to be traceable when they're used in a homicide. And, you know, people who are going to be covered in here, given the dialogue that just took place between Senator Ziegler and Barry, are going to be professional criminals. And i.e. hitmen. I can't see having those as misdemeanor offenses. They're not worth prosecuting those kind of things.
I haven't objected to reclassification. Could you do that?
You're talking now about 2, 3, and 4.
Just the flick.
Two, 3, and 4. Well, 3 and 4 involve them, and 2 now involves someone who knowingly sells, transfers firearms to a person who's mentally defective or intoxicated. Objection is, again, highly inappropriate.
It's highly inappropriate, but it's not as professional as as three and four.
Well, that's true, except for you're dealing with someone who, by and large, are dealing with firearms. Having, in other words, a pawnbroker who's selling, you know, the people coming in that kind of condition. I think that's serious.
Well, I don't have any objection.
Okay, how we break 1, 5, and 6, and 2?
And 2, 3, 4. I'm sorry, 1, 5, and 6, staying second degree, 2, 3, and 4, go to first.
Okay.
Okay, now this is the third degree one is the lessons for this. And it covers four types of conduct. Let me go through quickly. First is possessing a deadly weapon that is concealed on a person within arm's reach. Both Dan and I agree that this is on within arm's reach. It's unnecessary. It's concealed on a person to be sufficient. Subsection 2 only applies to possessing a firearm that is concealed in a propelled vehicle within arm's reach. Again, if it's on a person, it can be a deadly weapon. If it's in the propelled vehicle, it has to be a firearm. Subsection 3.
Wait a second, didn't we work that? You can keep a firearm in a propelled, in your own propelled vehicle just like it was in your house.
Well, we're getting, I mean, I would make that comment, but...
Well, I'm curious about that comment.
I'm just telling you what the statute says. Yes. And subsection 3, possessing a firearm on your person in any place for intoxicating liquor sold such on premises. And subsection 4, a person under 16 possesses a firearm without consent of parents, which is basically unnecessary. I don't see really too many reasons for keeping something like that there. Subsection B is a defense to carry concealed weapon. And I should point out, under existing law, there are no defenses to that crime. We recognize the defense when you're engaged in hunting, fishing, trapping, or other outdoor activity that necessarily involves carrying of a weapon for personal protection, or when you're carrying it on in your dwelling or property owned by you.
Okay, I want that to cover the automobile.
Well, you know, okay. So
in other words, it's my car, I'll decide where to keep the gun.
Well,
all
right. Let's just go through. Subsection 3 covers the possession of a firearm in a bar when it's on your business premises, or it's an employee of yours. So essentially we're saying that a bouncer can carry a firearm. Under existing law, everyone can carry a firearm in a bar as long as it's not concealed. We say that essentially the patron cannot, but the bouncer or the owner can. Subsection D says that the peace officer is not subject to the concealed weapon provision. And then subsection E, we try to define what concealed weapon, and it's classified to be misdemeanor.
Well, wait a minute now. Hold on.
Just a minute here.
How about that?
Yeah. Suppose everybody in this room is my guest. We go out to the Juneau trap shooting range, or the target range, if you will. And we all say, well, let's stop at the Squire's Inn, and I'll buy everybody a beer. What happens? I don't want to leave my weapon in the car. I can't carry it in with me, right? None of us can.
That is correct. Subsection 3 says you cannot carry it in.
Well, what would you do? Leave it on the front seat of your car, visible to everybody, and then lock your automobile?
Well,
this is the part that I have about exposed weapons in the car. I can't afford to have my firearms exposed to where somebody can look through the window and see them.
There is no existing prohibition today against carrying any type of weapon in a bar so long as it's not concealed. The reason the subcommittee felt it was necessary was because, at least in Anchorage, I think 30% of a firearm-related assault occurred current moments.
Let's not be filling out the baby with
the thing is that, remember, the great bulk of guys that commit crimes aren't going to care what the law says.
I'm not arguing with that.
And so the thing is that what you're doing is catching the rest of them.
This section I don't think is like that, because it it's going to get the person who wears the gun on a hip into the bar. It's not going to be able to do that anymore.
Well, I had drafted it.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's fine. If the fellow has a checkroom, and you can bring your gun in and hang it out.
That's
but if he doesn't, what do you do?
That's what I was going to say. I had drafted the bill, it seems about 4 years ago, it was basically to do this, and it didn't go anywhere. And I think it had a provision in there that provides for checking guns. And it was meant really to take care of the hunting lodge situation, which they're...
Yeah, hunting government, they have a bar. You know, the thing is that I can't go for anything that impinges the right of an Alaskan with firearms.
Has there been a problem with the firearms in bars?
Wasilla. And during the hunting season, people come in with shotguns and stack them inside, you know. And that some people that are always upset, the police were upset because they could come boiling out to make an arrest. And my God, the whole room's just full of firearms. Yeah, hell out.
A couple of years ago here in June, we had two guys come in off the ferry that were carrying twin pearl-handled 45 automatics, semi-automatics, in holsters on their hips with bandoleros, you know, 100 bullets, and just walking around town, going into bars.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing against the law, man.
No, it shouldn't be.
Senator, back to your hypothetical.
So what did they do then? Anything?
Nothing. There wasn't any trouble with it. They left town.
No, nobody cared, right?
No, I said, the thing that you're covering here, Dan, that you're hitting, isn't the guy that's like that, to show up with a pearl handle. What you're coming is the rabbit hunter that comes in for a beer at Big Lake off the snow machine. He's got nowhere to leave that shotgun outside, and you're not allowing him any place to leave it inside.
Well,
we drafted it.
Well, we don't even have to draft it then, because, I mean, the statute says possessing it on his person. So it assumes the fact there may be a place in the bar to leave it. Now, I guess what you're saying, if you have a statute like this, is that that bar owners will provide for that place. Now, but, I mean, you don't have to do any changing to it, Dan, because it says on his person. So I guess the fundamental question is, do you want to have a prohibition like that?
I don't want to have a prohibition like that. I'm perfectly willing to say loaded firearm. In other words, the guy's got to dump his cylinder when he goes in or empty his magazine. You know, and loaded shall be considered in chamber or magazine. So there's no way that you just can go chunk and have it loaded. You know, you've got to empty the magazine or empty the chamber and then go on. Because otherwise you're going to get all your snow machiners who can't leave the firearm outside.
What about Mr. Kleinfeld's example of the guy who's got a shotgun, he's going to have to shoot skeet, he puts it in a leather jacket, I mean case. Is that a concealed shotgun? Suppose he puts it in the trunk of his car in a case.
Well, okay, the way the statute is drafted now, it says within arm's reach.
So the trunk,
The trunk clearly would not be covered.
Well, suppose he puts it in the front seat with him. It's in a case, a leather case.
Okay, we say on page 75 that line 10, a firearm in a propelled vehicle is concealed if it's covered or closed in any manner so that an observer cannot determine that it's armed without. Removing the firearm on
a gun case, you wouldn't.
Which cars are close to it? I see that if you had a gun case, you would be able to tell it was a firearm.
You would be able to, but that still.
Suppose you put it in a box.
Well, Senator, then it
would be in trouble.
Concealed. There are really a number of. You could see that on this statute, there really are a number of.
I cannot take the statute, this one, the way it is now, because the thing is that I'm going somewhere, I've got my lunch, I've got my 22 Woodsman for spruce hemp and stuff like this, I've got it in the box with my sandwiches, you know, I've got it sitting on the seat in my pickup truck, and I'm breaking the law.
Well, I have little, my own feeling on this is that I don't see a need, that when you try drafting a statute that covers conduct that people engage in the last all the time, you're always going to have this problem. And I personally think that the kind of conduct we're talking about here, when the person engages in a crime, that is when you should be
keep it rested.
Fine, right.
But so what you've got to, you know, direct me.
All right, but the thing is, Stan, I can't take any statute that prohibits a man who hasn't broken the law from packing a gun around. Now, if the bar owner doesn't want it in there, he'll decide that the snow machiner, you know, that they have these at Big Lake now, since the row, they just said shotguns are to be left in and they've got a place for them, and you don't carry them into the bar. Hey, let's not tighten that one up. I can't take it, you know, and I want it very plain that if I have my gun under the seat in my car, which is where I carry it, a rack under there, that there's nothing wrong with that. And as far as the argument that the police have that, hey, this puts a gun awful close to somebody you stop that's just, well, you know, if he's just robbed the local liquor store, he's going to have that gun right under that corner of his leg where he can get at it, not even in a holster. And having a law against it isn't going to change him because he's busted too many already.
I think we've got an idea for an amendment.
Yeah, on this one.
Besides, tomorrow's going to be a lot easier to pass than this one.
I won't be here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He's going tonight. I'm just saying that tomorrow's going to be a lot easier to pass.
The only thing would happen tomorrow.
I think it's time to quit too.
Yeah. Which is the grease act.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anything that.
Senate Judiciary Committee meeting, May the 2nd, 78. Present for the purposes of quorum are Senator Ziegler, Coletta, and Holman. We'll have Mr. Jim McKenzie from the Legislative Affairs Agency right down at the end of the agenda.
To emphasize that the House says, you know, it's obvious I'm an employee of the legislature and I will do what Bill Barrier tells me to, and any assignment I'm given with respect to this bill, I'll do the best of my ability, regardless of whether I agree or disagree with what's being done. I've been involved with the criminal code since last July when Barry and others at the Anchorage Criminal Justice Center would send me drafts that either had been approved or were going to be submitted to the subcommission for redrafting. And I didn't change very much in that because quite often the subcommission had already decided on what it wanted, and neither Barry nor I had much discretion in changing that. I think that the bill that was submitted, House Bill 661, was in the main improved an awful lot by the House Judiciary Committee. I thought they worked very hard on it. It seems to me, however, that there are an awful lot of things still to matter with it, which would probably take a fair amount of time to correct. I know it doesn't take effect till December 1 of 79, and certainly corrections could be made after this session. I wonder, though, whether that would actually happen, given the human nature. I don't know how much momentum would
would be developed for making changes in it before, say, 6 months or so before it takes effect, and at that time I doubt that the legislature would be in session. What I'd like to do is just point out to you a few of the things I've noticed in the bill as I've been drafting it on several drafts.
Do you have these technical changes in the normal form?
No, I don't.
Was that a request made of you?
Yes, it was.
Why wasn't that done?
Because I don't have the time to do that on such short notice.